Massive genetic study reveals 90% of Earth's animals appeared at the same time. So says an article in TechTimes.com. We're going to talk about this and also the issue of origins with Kirby Anderson, who's a noted Christian broadcaster. He's also an author. He earned his master's degree at Yale University studying science, ecology, evolution, and so on. I'm Jerry Nugent. This is Vocal Point. Kirby, great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always good to be on with you, and certainly thank you for the years you've been on with me on radio as well.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime, anytime. Okay, so tell us about this recent discovery about, supposedly all of the creatures on Earth appeared, about 90% of them all, and they all appear about 100 to 200,000 years ago, or so they say. But that's a number much, different than what we've been told by evolutionists for the, down through the decades.
Well, and I think it's kind of interesting, Jerry, because even if you accepted the idea of an old Earth, there has always been what scientists have sometimes referred to evolution's Big Bang. Now, they're not talking about the astronomy Big Bang. They're just talking about the fact that when you look back, even assuming an old Earth and assuming that the geological column records that, you have most of the major phyla, those would be the broadest category of plants and animals, appear abruptly. In the pre-Cambrian sediments, you have hardly anything. You have a few, and then all of a sudden, boom. And even some of the evolutionists themselves have said, this starts making us feel a little bit uneasy, because if indeed you accept kind of the evolutionary idea, there should have been a slow, gradual, sequential kind of change that eventually gave us the life that we have on the planet. So even when we look at the geological record, it looks more like explosive evolution, or you could say creation. And so now when you look at what you're talking about here is when we look at the genetics, the genome, and some of the basics, what's called molecular biology, that's also illustrating this. Now, again, the fallback position sometimes for evolutionists is, well, we recognize that the so-called molecular clock sometimes has some skips. And so just because it looks like everything came together in a relatively short period of time doesn't necessarily mean that. But it is really intriguing evidence that for the first time, we have some genetic evidence that seems to correlate with some of the geological evidence. And so just something else to begin to consider as we look at this whole issue of creation versus evolution, intelligent design versus random chance in this very important issue of origins.
Excellent. Time magazine had a cover story about 10, 15, 20 years ago about the Cambrian explosion that you just referenced. And I remember this, I remember the phrase they used, biology's Big Bang. And now, in all fairness to them and to evolutionists in general, when they talk about the Cambrian explosion, they are talking about something that supposedly occurred 500 million years ago. This recent study is saying, well, maybe we're talking about more like 100,000 to 200,000 years ago. So that's a very interesting aspect of this. Now, Wendell Byrd, who is the attorney from Atlanta, and he actually argued on behalf of creationism in the 1987 Supreme Court decision that ruled against creationism, in its own way. But he used the phrase abrupt appearances. He said, look, abrupt appearances is what we find in the fossil record. I feel like this guy is totally vindicated.
I think so. When I talk about this, and I sometimes teach at Bible schools on the issue of creation evolution, and it's not something I do all the time because, as a talk show host, I'm on all sorts of other issues, but when I do teach about that, I point out that there are two issues that have really bothered evolutionists, and one is the issue of abrupt appearance. And sometimes when I'm showing pictures of the first dolphin or the first bat or the first, horseshoe crab or shrimp or whatever we find, it looks just like them. So you have, first of all, that they appear abruptly. You don't have any transitional forms. And second of all, we've already alluded to the other, and that is what's called stasis. I can show you a picture of the first shrimp we find in the fossil record. It looks like the shrimp that you'll probably eat tonight if you go to Red Lobster. I can show you the first horseshoe crab, and it looks just like the horseshoe crabs you find out on the beach. And so just the aspect of first abrupt appearance, and then the second one of stasis, that lots of times people say, well, if evolution is true, why is it that they look pretty much the same as they always did in the fossil record? And so both of those are, you know, at least considered somewhat of a challenge to the evolutionary idea, and one of the reasons why more and more people are looking at this issue of intelligent design.
Huh. Well, one of the things that this article mentions, it says that most animals appeared simultaneously. That's kind of the gist of the article. Listen to what they say, though. As to how that could have happened, it's unclear. A likely possibility is the occurrence of a sudden event that caused large-scale environmental trauma and wiped out majority of the Earth's species. Now, I read that and I think, wow, can anybody say Noah's flood? I mean, honestly, that's the first thing that leaps to my mind. I don't know about you, but your comments.
Well, again, that's kind of interesting because, again, back to this idea of abrupt change. You know, when I was at Yale University, one of the people that came to speak to us is a guy by the name of Stephen Jay Gould, who was at Harvard.
Oh, yeah.
And he and Niles Eldridge at the time had developed this theory that said the reason you don't see transitional fossils, those so-called missing links, which are still missing,
yes,
is because they appear abruptly. And it's almost like there was this, what he called punctuated equilibria. Well, I remember some of the other professors there and recognized that most everybody in the room was an evolutionist, but some of them said, boy, this sounds more like creation. This sounds more like Noah's flood. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, all these animals show up on the fossil record simultaneously like they got off of the ark. And, of course, now you have this.
Or they were destroyed, or they were destroyed in the flood because they weren't on the ark. Sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, but that's a good point. And so now that was sort of said back in the days when, again, they were looking at the fossil record and saying a lot of these things are showing up abruptly. And so then now when you have the genetic argument, which is the article that you're talking about here, they're saying some of the same kinds of things. So it is funny because this has been two separate discussions, separated by a couple of decades, to be honest, but nevertheless are coming back to some of those same ideas. And I do remember even one of my major professors saying, boy, this sure sounds a lot like people are arguing for creation here, and we're all supposed to be evolutionists. So anyway, it's just kind of interesting to see how some of these debates and discussions kind of come back again like a boomerang.
If this were on the other side, in other words, if this story were somehow, you know, proving or documenting something, you know, related to evolution and that hypothesis, I think this would have gotten wide coverage. But as a story, I mean, I only happened to read about it because a friend of mine sent me this story from Tech Times. The story, by the way, was written by Nikolai Arce, or A-R-C-E. I don't know how to pronounce that. Do you think this would be a wider story if it were pro-evolution?
Oh, of course it would be. And again, anybody that's done any study in this recognizes that, as with any scientific endeavor, you always have contrary evidence. And so what I think most scientists do is say, well, if I don't have an answer for that, I'll just put that on the shelf, you know, and maybe we'll find an answer for that in the future. And so that's maybe the way in which some people look at this and go, huh, that's interesting. That's not what I expected. That doesn't fit with my evolutionary model. Doesn't sit very well with some of the things I've always believed before. But I don't have an answer, so I'll just set it on the side, and it's not going to get a lot of press. To use a good illustration is years ago when I had one of my major professors at Yale say, would you like to see the latest hominid find from Africa? And I'm sure I'd love to see this because it'd been in the news. And so he takes me into the Peabody Museum, and I'm looking around for a skeleton that I'm going to see. And he comes up to this table, and there's a box, and there's a piece of a jaw. And that's this discovery. And it's a nice way of saying that the entire discussion, the front page news, the headlines were all based upon a piece of a jaw. And so you have to recognize that sometimes when something sort of validates a theory, like the theory of evolution or something else, that gets a lot of press. When you find something that doesn't fit, well, then we set it over there on one of the shelves or put it in a drawer with some of the other fossils and hope we find an answer for it in the future. I think this is one of those categories and one of the reasons why you had to dig pretty far to find the particular article.
You know, it's interesting that story you just told about the piece of the jaw, that must have been, what, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whenever you earned your master's degree. It'd be interesting to fast forward to today. You know, maybe they revised their theory and said, oh, actually, this is part of an ancient ape. And by the way, what is a hominid?
Well, and to finish your point, Marvin Lubinow has written a book where it talks about the human fossils many years ago, and in that he points out, and there have been others as well, but I thought I'd give him a shout-out for a minute, there have been a few people working in that field that have actually said, you know what, when the lights are on, the Klieg lights are on, and when the cameras are rolling, we have this great transitional fossil, Australopithecus or Zinjanthropus or whatever it might be. But then later, in the cool, quiet recesses, if you want to say, of some of these labs, we say, no, I guess that just sort of fits. And back to the idea of a hominid, when you look at this, you're saying that anything that has sort of ape-like structures, so whether it's things like Australopithecus or Zinjanthropus, all the way up to Neanderthal man, to Homo habilis, to Homo sapiens, those are all kind of referred to as hominids. And each time we try to find something that we're sure is the perfect missing link. And then later, when there aren't so many people making a big deal about it, and when the cameras are off and in the coolness of some more rational evaluation, they're saying, no, these just fit into the whole category we have of other Australopithecines. And so I guess we probably shouldn't refer to that as a missing link. And even Neanderthal, which I think some of our listeners would be familiar with, it used to be classified Homo Neanderthalensis. Now it's classified Homo sapiens Neanderthalensis because they recognize that it's just very much like a human being. And actually, Neanderthal had a slightly larger cranial capacity than we do, so it didn't fit so well as the so-called missing link.
Huh. So at the end of the day, essentially all these different things can be categorized either as men or as apes, but there's nothing in between, you know, that's definitive. And by the way, using this as an example, in the Scopes monkey trial, Clarence Darrow used this fossil find, and he made a big deal out of it as if this was part of ancient man, and it turned out to be a pig's tooth. So it was rejected within 10 years, I believe, of the actual trial. But are all these fossils essentially either man or ape, but nothing in between? At least nothing definitive.
That seems to be the case. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you've said that, you know, you talk about the Nebraska man or the Piltdown hoax. There's a number of those. And even more recently, we've had some where people have said, well, here's a perfect transitional fossil between reptiles and birds, you know, something that's even a better transitional fossil than Archaeopteryx. And it turns out that that was a hoax that came out of China. So you have a desire sometimes for scientists to find those missing links. And when they find one that fits, they get really excited. And then later on, they go, no, I guess it was probably either maybe a little too much extrapolation, or maybe in a few cases, and those are rare, but there are a few cases where there have been some hoaxes that have been perpetrated on the scientific community. So, you know, as we Christians sit back and watch this, we say, okay, you know, we have no concern about what may be found in the fossil record, or if nothing else, archaeology lately seems to be confirming the Bible, so why can't we also believe that as we do more work in paleontology, that would confirm some of our biblical ideas as well.
All right, we have about a minute to wrap up. Why does this issue matter?
Well, I think it does because, you know, Genesis talks about the fact that this is the foundation of the universe and the solar system. And people say, well, the first 11 chapters, that's a little more like a metaphor. It's like a story. Well, you know, Jesus refers to the first 7 chapters of Genesis. He talks about an Adam and Eve. He talks about the death of Abel and compares it to the death of Zechariah. He talks about a Noah. He talks about a Jonah. So, again, a lot of our belief in creation is tied back to our belief that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, and certainly he would know whether or not Genesis is historically accurate, so that's why we believe it.
Hmm. All right, Kirby Anderson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. And Kirby, by the way, has written some books even, some of which deal with creation and origins. Probe.org for more information. Kirby Anderson, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Looking forward to the next opportunity.
All right, God bless. All right, bye-bye.